I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Jules, I'd love to say we have a packed show, but guess what? It's international break. There's been no games yet. There's still stuff to talk about. There's still big stories.
Always.
Obviously, Barcelona, big, big boost for them. The Newsom prosecutor, we'll be getting into that. We'll be looking at Conte. We'll be talking about the French captain's armband, which is why you wear the
Of course, the game.
However, we have to start with the Manchester United sale. Now, where we are right now is supposedly, as we record this on a Thursday morning, Qataris, the two main bidders, the Qataris and Ratcliffe, are going to submit their bids. The Financial Times reporting yesterday.
Second bids,
Their second bids. The Financial Times reporting that Sir Jim Ratcliffe had gone up to a £5 billion bid. Supposedly, the Glazers value United at $6 billion. Presumably the Qataris have a comparable bid. But there's a weird, odd twist in this, in that they said that they submitted their bids on Wednesday. And when we say they said, it's not like Sir Jim Ratcliffe says, right? These people hire servants, PR servants, to go and talk to people. When you see stuff in the news, it's because there's hired guns, usually our former colleagues or other people come from the world of PR, who go and say, oh, this is what Sir Jim is doing. So they tell everybody that they've submitted their bid. The Qataris say that they've submitted their bid.
Yeah.
And then Rain, who is the company in New York that's supposed to handle the sale on behalf of the Glazers, says, oh no, they didn't submit their bids. They asked for an extension. And then supposedly they're going to submit their bids today.
It's a bit confusing.
It's so weird and cack-handed.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a good look on the sale of maybe the biggest club in the world, one of the biggest with Real Madrid. It's just, I'm not sure it reflects good, whatever is true. I mean, someone is lying anyway. On Sir Jim Ratcliffe, on maybe the Qataris, if you really want the club and you can go up to $5 billion. If you can't, you just say like there will be no second offers, I just won and that's it. If you can, why waiting a bit longer? Why needing an extension? But as you said, when we were preparing for the show, the deadline that was set on Wednesday night is not really an official deadline, as in like if it's not by then it's over kind of deadline.
Yeah. And obviously Sir Jim Ratcliffe has history with like ignoring deadlines and Rain altogether. You know, it's funny, you may use the word like who's lying, who screwed up here. Normally when you have people misdirecting, it's because they gain an advantage somehow, right?
Yeah.
In this case, I don't see how anybody gains an advantage. So I don't see how anybody, it's more like if there was a screw up, people called it farce. It's a farce by incompetence and because somebody screwed up. Whether Rain screwed up, whether it would have to be on the other side. It would have to be the Qataris and Sir Jim both screwing up at the same time, saying they'd lodged the bids, and Rain saying, no, you didn't. Nobody gains an advantage from this.
No.
It's not like they get more time. Yeah, they get an extra 24 hours. I mean, but it's like
what difference does that make
for a final exam on a bid like this, right? So I presume the mystery will be solved, but what we do know is these bids will come in.
Yeah.
And this is why I cannot emphasize this enough. All these people, I know we're in the media business, we generate content, going on about the deadline, that Rain has a deadline, it's a firm, you know. This is not like Roman Abramovich selling Chelsea, where the government said, all right, you got to sort this out. The Glazers can sell, they cannot sell.
Exactly.
The Glazers can buy out their siblings, and the Glazers can take on more debt. The Glazers can get minority investment. They don't have, they can sit on the rear side, on the rear ends and do nothing.
Exactly. So
these deadlines don't really mean anything.
No, and I think whatever happens in this process, I think the door will always be open from the Glazer. If anybody wants to come in 6 months time or 8 times, let's say they don't sell, with a bigger offer, with a consortium that can get up to $6 billion with multiple investors, not just Sir Jim Ratcliffe or Ineos or just the Sheikh from Qatar, then they will still be listening, I'm sure. You know, and that's the thinking here. Now that we're hearing that, maybe they never were that keen of selling, certainly some of the siblings. We know that Sir Jim wants the 69% that the Glazer own, which is not the full 100%.
Right.
Maybe he needs someone else investing with him for the remaining, for the rest of the shares. The Qataris will go for the whole 100%, debt-free, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe the Qataris need somebody else to come with them. I don't know.
They want $6 billion.
Yeah.
supposedly, £6 billion, which is maybe closer to $7 billion.
Yeah.
That would be, what, nearly twice the most expensive sports franchise ever sold?
Yeah, you're right. The Denver Broncos last year for £3.6 billion, I think it was. And, I mean, $6 billion, just to go back to your point about even the richest of the richest don't... I mean, it's a lot of money, $6 billion for a football team.
Well, the other thing is, in this climate, you have a situation where obviously there's... There's a global recession and there's high inflation, right?
Yeah.
And they're raising interest rates. So that means that if you're going to borrow money to finance your bid, it's difficult to do because it makes it even more expensive, right?
Exactly.
And also because there's less money sloshing around, there's less people who are saying like, oh, look, I have an extra, $500 million lying around. Let me join Sir Jim, right?
Exactly.
These are a lot of dynamics that people don't always understand, and it's the same thing, like I said, with the Qataris, with the Saudis, with so on. Yeah, these people have a lot of assets.
Yeah. But
a rich person doesn't just sit on his cash. He invests it in different types of assets, some of which are more liquid, some of which are less liquid. And many times if you have to sell an asset to raise money to buy another asset, like say Manchester United, you might not want to do it now because there's a recession. And the value of your asset might be less than it was before, right? So you don't want to take a loss on that.
And that's why I think it was interesting to hear Sir Jim Ratcliffe in his interview, I think with the New York Times, he did on maybe Tuesday, saying like he would not overpay for something. He didn't mention Manchester United per se, but he said like we can't overspend just because someone set a price. And if it sounded like you want the $6 billion, there's no way I would pay $6 billion for something I don't believe is worth that.
Right.
And he was saying clearly, I'm happy to pay what I think is worth the price for something I want, but I think if you really want the $6 billion, and maybe the $6 billion is to get 5 or 5.5, and they might be happy in the end, but if really they want the six, I don't think they will get it.
And I think establishing what something is worth, it's pretty remarkable because you get a whole range of calculations and valuations, right? When Chelsea were sold, and that was a forced sale, I spoke to a number of people who do this stuff, and they said, oh, well, a fair price for Chelsea, given they need investment in the stadium, and, you know, they Abramovich lost, what, $1 million a week over there.
Yeah.
He says, like, I think, you know, it should be something like, most people are saying it should be maybe $1.5 billion, right? And then said it went to 2.5.
Yeah.
I spoke to somebody else who has bought and sold a football club and whose business is financing sales of football clubs and says, oh, the real value should have been like $3.5 billion. And it would have been that if the government hadn't forced a sale, if there could have been like a normal auction and whatever.
And beating and stuff.
That's why for me, when people always bring up like the Forbes list, like these are the worst, like they have no idea. This is like serious finger in the air stuff. It becomes real when stuff actually gets sold.
Yeah.
Right? That's when it becomes real. And it's so difficult to assess the actual value, and different people have different priorities and so on. So I think this is why it's taking time. This is why there's a lot of uncertainty. I want to ask you a little bit more about Jim Ratcliffe, because it seems among certain United fans, right? Oh, Qatar is good because they have access to unlimited funds, which means we'll never be cash strapped and we won't have debt and whatever.
Yeah.
Ratcliffe good because, you know, he's a local Manchester boy.
Of course, yeah.
Good. What's Ratcliffe? Well, two things. One is we know Ratcliffe's been obviously heavily involved in cycling.
Yeah.
What's Ratcliffe been like as an owner of Nice?
It's an interesting one. I mean, he also owns Lausanne in Switzerland. That's not been doing well, and the decisions that he, not directly Sir Jim Ratcliffe, but the people that he put in place there have taken haven't worked out yet. And it's, in a way, a little bit similar with Nice in the sense that I think they have done some really good things in their scouting and recruitment to go for young players, clearly with the idea of having a young team with a lot of energy that can bring you success. even if that opens the door for bigger clubs to come and then poach those players.
Sorry, is that like Ross Barkley, Aaron Ramsey, these guys?
No, no, no.
This
so
is
the let young... Me, let me come to okay. that. No, 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 let me come to that. Because I think the most important is the policy of young players, like Efren Thuram, for example, yeah. Or Todibo, those kind of guys. Great. I think he started well. They went and got Galtier, for example, who, again, I think for a club like Nice is good. After Patrick Vieira was sacked. So you could see what they were doing, and I think that was quite promising. And then somehow it changed. It changed. They went to get Lucien Favre as a manager, which was a huge mistake. Because even, yeah, you can think that he was at the club before under previous ownership, did really well. It just never, it would have never worked with this the squad that they were building and this kind of new, younger policy.
Right.
That was the wrong choice.
Lucien Favre, perhaps, for those who are maybe not familiar with him, would it be fair to say they hoped that he would kind of be a poor man's Ancelotti in terms of manager, smart, pragmatic,
but
everybody likes him?
20 years ago, which I think Carlo has evolved with his time, a bit like Sir Alex, Favre, as good as he is still like he was 20 years ago. And then Sir Dev Brailsford, who was very good in cycling, obviously, and had a lot of success there, trying getting involved in Nice, becoming this like unofficial sporting director type of guy. And that's when I think I had serious question marks about why is Jim Ratcliffe doing, really? Because why would you trust in Dev Brailsford, who knows nothing about football, to go and run a club like Nice? So hence then the Aaron Ramsey, Ross Barkley, Kasper Schmeichel, all those weird signing from the Premier League.
So just some context on Dave Brailsford, for those who don't know. He was... Cycling used to be a thing that people in Britain didn't really get, right? Until maybe 15, 20 years ago, right? I mean, you know, they were always rubbish. There were a couple of Scottish guys who were good in like the 80s, right? And then generally, right? Cycling, you know, leave it to the French, the Belgians, the Italians, the Spaniards, maybe the odd Colombian and whatever, right? You guys... you know, stick to something else, right? Stick to speedway. And then all of a sudden, they all got really, really good. And Dave Brailsford was seen as some kind of sporting guru. Everything
touched. Masterminding, all of that.
Yeah, the whole idea of marginal gains and stuff like that, and like letting them bring their own pillows and sheets and having hand sanitizer so that they wouldn't, you know, catch a flu, all this stuff. Then it got a little bit hairy, right? Because some people got into some trouble.
Yeah,
I don't know the exact ins and outs because I don't follow cycling because I've lost interest in it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think on the Sky, and even when Ineos took over Sky as the cycling road team, they certainly had to answer, let's put it that way, a lot of questions about doping and
performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah, allegations and things like that. And they've been kind of okay with the outcome of it, certainly Sir Dev Brailsford, but he left cycling really quickly to start.
Was it somebody accusing them that they had like a little engine in one of their...
They're not the only ones, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, cycling...
Mechanical doping,
I don't have much faith in anything in that sport. But anyway, sorry, I jumped in there just to give people some context. This guy, Dave Brailsford, was highly respected, maybe tarnished a little bit, but still a very smart guy. I know people for them, you know, super smart.
Super smart. And then Sir Jim Ratcliffe said, hey, why don't you come and become this Ineos head of sports, basically?
Right.
Because Ineos are involved in a lot of sport, from sailing to Formula One to football to cycling, all of that. So that was his role. But then he took, I think, clearly a lot of enjoyment by being involved in the football side of Ineos, especially at Nice, where he spent all his time. He was on the Friday where Sir Jim Ratcliffe visited Manchester. He was with him. So that makes me think that he wants to get heavily involved in the United process, and maybe United, if Sir Jim Ratcliffe, you know, wins and buys the club. And again, I'm sorry, but you remember when Clive Woodward, so England won the Rugby World Cup in 2003, then Clive Woodward became this guy where any sport will call him and say, hey, why don't you come and have an audit or help us try to find... It just doesn't work like this. And for me, Brailsford at Nice has done more bad things than good things.
Yeah. This is a fascinating topic, the idea of the transferability of from one sport to another.
Yeah.
The winning mentality, if you're an organization guy, can you work across it? There have been some successes. I'm thinking of, you know, Julio Velasco, who he was a volleyball coach from Argentina, very successful in Argentina and in Italy. He then moved into football at Lazio in their heyday, did some very, very good things there. But it's really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And then as a layperson, if you're Brailsford and you're the genius marginal gains, I'm thinking, what's the marginal gains with Aaron Ramsey, who hasn't, you know, who's hardly kicked a ball in club football in 2 years? You know, Ross Barkley was a big gamble.
Yeah.
Schmeichel didn't quite work out either, right?
At the beginning, now he's better. Ramsey has been really good lately. But yeah, you're right. And they changed manager because they realized Favre was the wrong appointment. And they went with Didier Digard, who was the assistant coach, reserve coach previously. And this is working out really well now. But this is a key time. And just to finish on Radcliffe, I think people in France and Nice fans don't really, and maybe because we don't know if he's going to buy United. So if he doesn't buy United, if you're a Nice fan, it's okay. It's still his main club. But what does that mean for Nice if Radcliffe buys United? Because since he bought Nice, he's been like, I want this club to go into the Champions League. I want this club to compete with PSG and Lyon and Marseille, Monaco, blah, 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 blah. I want this club to go and win titles. And I'm going to invest for it. I'm going to work hard for it, etc. If you buy United, where is your focus? You can't have the two clubs in the Champions League. It becomes more worrying, I think.
And this is my other question about, again, for those who don't follow Ligue 1, right? But from the outside, it would seem, okay, you've got Paris Saint-Germain who outspend everybody else and whatever. But France are getting four Champions League spots, right? So you've got three other slots there. You have Marseille, who is a legit, you know, historical giant, but they've got serious budgetary restrictions, and they're kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors. You have Monaco, who always have to do it by being creative with a young player here and there and the money, whatever. You know, Nice is a big city, fantastic stadium.
Yeah.
There's money in that part of France.
Yeah.
I would have thought, you say, all right, let's chuck in, let's make a serious investment. Let's go to the next level so that maybe we can't compete with Paris Saint-Germain, but we can certainly compete with Marseille, and we are, you know, we can really make a run for number two, and then if Paris Saint-Germain falter, maybe we go to number one. Instead, in France, what do we have? We have Lille on a shoestring year after year, right? They're up there, they're competing. We have Lens even more so. You know, they're only getting promoted, what, 3 years ago, something like that?
Yeah.
Right? They're up near the top. If this is going to be his approach, that it's going to be organic growth, I wonder how that goes down at Manchester United, because
it has to be different, don't you think? You
can't. So it has to be heavier investment at Manchester United.
Surely. And I think they know that. They must. I don't know how much money they would allow or make available for transfers in the summer if they buy the club. But you would think that you can't. It's a different world, really. You know, he's invested a lot. I think overall, since he took over, I think it's 200 million euros in transfer, in recruitment, which is great. But that would buy you one Harry Kane and a couple of young players, maybe.
Yeah. I think you need to look, what is it as a proportion of club revenue that he's willing to put in? I think that's, and obviously United's revenues are a lot higher than Nice's. What impact do we think this is having on Ten Hag, on the club? You know, if this uncertainty drags on into the summer, do we think it's going to have a negative impact on recruitment? Or is it will have no impact?
We mentioned the deadline before, and of course, you're right. The deadline is like, it's really a fictive deadline, let's call it that way. However, there's a point where you need to know who's in charge in the summer, because, as you said, that will impact naturally the transfer policy. If the Glazers are still there, but the process is still going on, the Glazers are not going to spend hundreds of millions on new players if they're still thinking about selling the club. Why would they put their own money when the club is about to change hands, for example, right?
Well, they could just simply take on debt, which obviously would affect the price at the other end.
Yeah. But again, that would be complicated in a way.
It's interesting because we had a lot of reports, Mark Ogden and Dawson and others, saying, well, the club spent their money last summer. They're not going to spend. This is assuming the Glazers stay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're going to try to grow with what they have this coming summer. Who knows? I mean, clubs say a lot of things, right? and then they change their mind and whatever. Maybe Ten Hag might say, well, now help me out more. I showed you the job. But it can have an impact, I think that way. That said, that'll be offset by the fact that they're going to be in the, you know, I think they'll, I presume they'll be in the Champions League next year. They'll have, I think, newfound enthusiasm. They've won one trophy. You know, they're competing for two others. They can win one of those. So I think you will get an uplift in the summer, but there's no question that this could impact their plans this summer.
And unless there's a new owner, and then you, without having a Chelsea, Bodø, Ekberg, crazy summer spree, or like a Newcastle one that was lower key, if you want, maybe in between or whatever. But usually a new owner comes in and was like, you want to look good with the fans, with your manager, and you start spending money to give the manager the recruitment that he wants. So maybe in that case, it would be better if you're a United fan to see a new owner coming in, unless the Glazer says, we're staying and we're investing in the stadium, in the training ground, and in the squads, and they make that clear. So it'd be interesting to see.
Well, interesting. United need help in midfield, so maybe we'll see Aaron Ramsey back in the Premier League. How about that?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, enough United, Jules. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Now, it's been 5 days since Antonio Conte has accused his players of being selfish and reminded everyone of Spurs' perpetual underachievement under these owners, winning close to nothing. I think they did win a League Cup in the air.
But Juan still.
Oh, yeah, wow. Now, despite all this, he hasn't been sacked yet. He's still there.
He's still there.
And no, people are like, oh, they're discussing his compensation. Like, as we said, nonsense.
Well,
right?
No, they might.
3 months.
Yeah, but they might say to him, listen, the way you talked about the club is unacceptable. We're not gonna pay you off your remaining wages, but instead, let's find an agreement somewhere. You know, and lawyers are getting involved, which, as you know, because you hate them, it's never easy when lawyers start getting involved. So I really don't think he will be there when the Premier League comes back. I have to be honest. I think Ryan Mason will be in charge. I think even if he still has some support from some players in that dressing room, like Kulusevski. I think he's got his boys there. I think overall, there's a fracture between him and the dressing room, and there must be a fracture between him and Daniel Levy, Joe Louis, people in that board.
Fabio Paratici.
God, imagine.
Now, okay, I'm not a lawyer, right? As I understand it, they can find some clause in his contract and say, this is gross misconduct. This entitles us to sack you immediately without thing. You do that, you go to lawyers for months.
Yeah.
And the process. Amount of money that's involved here, to save $4 million?
Yes.
Which is what you'd pay him. And in the end, it's going to come down to somewhere in between. I don't know that you need to negotiate and create more instability and sort of stop Ryan Mason from getting to work. For that amount of money.
Yeah.
And what you said about the dressing room, it's interesting. We touched upon this before. I'm just going to go over this again, right? Who are the leaders in the dressing room? Harry Kane has said nothing.
Yeah.
But we do know that Harry Kane's been pretty close to Conte, right? Throughout his tenure. I think Harry Kane's like, I'm assuming Harry Kane's discussion is like, he's not certainly not talking about me.
Exactly.
Right?
I was going to say that.
So what do I care?
Yeah.
Eric Dier is basically Conte's adopted son.
Yeah.
Right?
He told us he was the reincarnation of Maldini. So, you know.
So those two guys are probably the two most important players in the Spurs dressing room in terms of leadership. I think they're the two best players. Two other guys I would have thought are important are, one, Hugo Lloris, not talking about him because he's injured. He's not there. Right? And the other one I would have thought in midfield, Højbjerg, who has spoken out.
Yeah.
And he's taken, I think, more of a tentative line. He says, look, I get it. You're unhappy. We've let you down. Please tell me exactly
what
we've
done.
Yeah, be more precise. Right? Be more precise, right?
I mean, it was pretty clear still.
So I think we can say Højbjerg did not like being lumped in with the others, right?
Yeah.
Although it was Højbjerg who missed the tackle on the way to the goals. Who knows, right? But who else matters in this dressing room? who else has any weight? And I always go to this point, right? When people bring up, you know, Chelsea back in the days, it was Terry and Lampard. Who else has that weight?
It's not so much even that, Gab. I think it's just like you can't have a toxic atmosphere, tension between a dressing room, players who feel like, you know, the way he talked, the way he behaves, because they need top four. Right, I think if they don't get top four, as well as not having a manager, can you just imagine? So I can see why it's not an easy decision to take in a way, although it looks easy maybe on paper. Harry Redknapp, who hasn't managed in 6 years and is 76 years old, he's supposedly available to return to Spurs if they need him, Gab. Just, you know, just to finish the season. Should we consider him as an option?
No, I love the fact that, you know, he's willing to leave his mansion in Sandbanks and come back. But no.
Please.
No. Please. The names out there, it's such a grab bag that suggests to me they haven't thought about it, right? I'm just going to read out the names. We don't need to react to them, but it's Pochettino, obviously. Oliver Glasner, who I feel like they watched some on television.
I mean, they played against him, at least in the Champions League. Right, so
exactly,
he was,
right?
He was there.
Luis Enrique, who I think can hold out for a bigger job, no disrespect to Spurs.
Yeah.
Also, not the easiest guy to deal with. Thomas Tuchel, not the easiest guy to deal with. De Zerbi, the guy just got a new job. I don't know. And Postecoglou, I'd love, because I love Big Ange.
We would love that.
And Thomas Frank. And
just signed a new deal, so good luck by getting the
exactly. So I think they're going to take their time to think about this one. Brazil play Morocco in a friendly on Sunday, which means Seleção players get asked their thoughts on the next national team manager, since they only have an interim one right now, and they bat their eyelids at Carlo Ancelotti. Jules, I think you and I both like this idea, so yes. I'll ask you this instead. How likely is it that he will not return for a third season as Real Madrid boss because he gets sacked?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome of the season, Gab. It wouldn't be a reflection on his time there, on this spell, because obviously he was there before too. I just think that if everything that we hear, you can see that it looks like the end of his cycle, of this cycle, and then they start again. Comes the summer with someone else in charge, a new one in charge. And I think they would say, thank you so much for everything you've done, not just this spell, the one before, all of that. It was great, but it's just time to move on.
And I'll tell you what, if he wins that, much as I love him, if he wins the Champions League and he wins Copa del Rey, that shouldn't change your decision. If you decide you're rebuilding, right, going in a different direction, rebuild.
Exactly. And Gav, if Carleto does go, the range of replacement that have been mentioned is, again, very interesting. Young former Madridistas like Raul or Xabi Alonso, Pochettino, of course, Zidane returning for the third time, and Thomas Tuchel. What does that tell you?
It tells me that I don't think Florentino's really thought about it. Or if he has, he's keeping it very, very close to his chest. Yeah. Xabi Alonso would be interesting. I think it would be a huge departure in terms of playing style. I'm not quite sure he's ready for a job that size. Raul, in-house, safe pair of hands solution, and cheaper solution. Poch, I think, on paper, maybe the best solution. Zidane, that would be a continuation of where you are.
Yeah.
Good news and bad news for Barcelona, Jules. Let's get the bad news out of the way. They're still not compliant with La Liga's cost controls, and after a very complicated legal dispute we don't need to get into, court has ruled that a clause saying Gavi can leave as a free agent in June comes back into effect. How concerned should they be?
I'm very concerned, obviously, because that opens
the
door.
Well, not about Gavi leaving.
Never know. No, you don't think so. And that's my point was coming. Right. Like, I think they should be concerned because this clause is valid and you never know what can happen. Not too concerned either because you know how much he loves this club. When he arrived, obviously, quite young. He's not a Barcelona. He's not a Catalan kid. But still, he would feel like home, to be fair. And I think he's very attached to Xavi, to what the club is doing. He's a huge part in this current process. So you don't think that he would want to leave and, I don't know, come to Liverpool or Manchester City or that kind of club. However, what is, I think, more worrying, Gav, is they can't even register his new number and a new contract because they don't have the money. So for all the talks of who they're going to recruit, and we will talk about a player suddenly that might be coming in the next few quick hits, that has to be a Rory. How? You need to find the money somewhere. Is it by selling an Ansu Fati or someone like that to be able to keep Gavi, to sign new players, maybe even Messi or stuff like that? I don't know.
So Matteo Alemanni, the sporting director, said, well, you know, we're halfway there when we get the Griezmann money and Gerard Piqué retiring. But they still have other issues. There's a report the other day, Jordi Alba's owed $33 million next year in deferred payments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is just all the rest of the levers. And what's ironic in all this is, guess whose contract expires in June 2024? Matteo Alemanni himself. They can't even give him a new deal.
Exactly.
And he's the guy who's supposed to make everything work. So a lot's being done on trust.
Yeah. But at least good news, Gab, because Spanish news agency EFE reports that prosecutors in the Enriquez Negreira case, you know, the former vice president of the Referee Association, haven't found any evidence that those $7 million paid by Barca over three seasons to Negreira was used to corrupt referees and influence games.
So the source here is really important. For those who don't know, EFE is like the Reuters of Spain, right? Sometimes you quote reports in many countries, you know, I want to criticize my colleagues in the media, but the clubs have been known to plant stories and one way or the other.
Agent, yeah.
You're not going to do that with EFE. EFE, if they say this, I think it's accurate. Because it's really hard to prove. It's really, really difficult to prove that Enriquez Negreira took the money and started paying referees on behalf of Barcelona, right?
Yeah.
And even if he just influenced them saying, like, okay, no, let's appoint this referee, not that referee, whatever. It's very, very hairy to go and prove anything with that. You're left with the fact that then you're not corrupt, you're just stupid because you gave somebody $7 million who did nothing for you except for spend it on a lavish lifestyle, according to other stories.
Yeah.
This story is a stain, whichever way you do it. The good news is it looks like they're unlikely to face criminal prosecution, which I think is actually probably fair enough when you think that, you know, if they can't prove it and it was several
presidents. So they got scammed, basically.
They got stabbed by Enriquez Negreira. It's another blot on Mr. Bartomeu.
Well done.
Fabrizio Romano and others report that Barcelona are close to a verbal agreement to sign defender Inigo Martinez on a free transfer from Athletic Bilbao. Jules, I feel like this story's been going on for a year, right? Can we just knock this out? Is this a good idea? 32 years old. Very good defender.
Very good defender. But
do you need another center back? Is this a priority?
Is it really where you need to strengthen, considering how little room you have to strengthen your squad? Or certainly whatnot right now. I'm not so sure. You already have Koundé, even if you play him at right back more often than a center back. Araujo, who we said is one of the best defenders in Europe already. You've got Christensen, who's having a really good season. You've got Marcos Alonso, who can play there, who's left-footed, by the way.
You haven't mentioned Eric yet.
I don't want to mention him.
Mention Eric Garcia, okay.
I'm all for, I love Inigo Martinez. And although I feel a bit sad for Athletic Bilbao if they don't get any money from someone who they clearly nurtured and went through the academy, etc., blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
He's 32. He's given them 32. The best
and
years
and
of
to
his
be
life.
Fair, he arrived from another club before too. So, but still, this is not the position I would have strengthened if I was Matteo Alemanni, but I'm not Matteo Alemanni. So, Italy face England in a Euro qualifier in a few hours' time on Thursday night, as we record this. And Roberto Mancini has called up Matteo Retegui and compared him to a young Batistuta. Is it a good idea to compare your young players to those of the past, especially great names?
No, not when they're this young. And I think, so he plays center forward and he's got a lot of energy and physicality. What gets me about Etegui, and I'm curious to see him. Obviously,
I can't wait.
He scored. He's a Boca Juniors guy, but he's on loan at Tigre, where I think he's averaging one goal every two games. It's fine. What I wonder about is who's the big, strong center forward type on the Argentine national team? Oh, look, they don't have one, unless you want to get into what Dario Benedetto's story, territory stuff like that, right? So I'm wondering why did Scaloni not call this guy up? That's what makes me nervous. I'm not an expert on Argentine league football. So it makes me a little bit nervous about this. He's 23 now. It's not like he's 18,
That's true.
It's not like he's turned down Argentina in the past because of, I feel Italian because my
Mancini said that he was expected Retegui to say no to Italy because he wanted to play for Argentina.
I'd be annoyed if I'd scored that many goals in Argentina. I said, I don't even get included in any kind of marginal squad. So I don't know, but I am keeping an open mind about this. Worked out well with Camoranesi, so, you know, maybe he'll bring a World Cup too.
Yeah.
Mesut Ozil has retired from football. Jules, he's 34, only made a couple of appearances for Basaksehir here this season. How do you see his legacy? This one's complicated, so take your time.
Yeah, I'll start and then you tell me what you think. I think he's an incredible talent, one of the most gifted players that we've seen in recent years, certainly I think in German history. At his peak, and it's probably between 2010 and 2014, so the 3 years at Real Madrid, then winning the World Cup with Germany. Maybe you could add one season or two with Arsenal at a time where it was difficult under Wenger. I just think that on his day, he was the assist king. He was the creative king, really. I don't think we will see anytime soon someone with that vision, with that passing quality, the perfect pass at the perfect time, with the perfect weight on the ball. Some of those passes, I think, will stay in our mind forever. The goal that he scored, for example, against Ludogorets, where his dummy sat down two defenders, also will stay in our minds. But there's a feeling that he hasn't fulfilled all that potential. And in the end, I think that might stay with it too.
Yeah, I think it'll stay with him despite, obviously, the titles he's won, including the big one. And he won the World Cup as a really important player.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people say, like, oh, he was born in the wrong era. The game passed him by because in the past he just would have been a pure number 10. He would have been, like, you know, European Riquelme. Maybe to some degree, but let's not forget, when he was playing for Germany especially, when they were really pressing the crap out of the opposition, you know, his numbers, he covered a lot of ground. Yeah, he worked really,
he could
really
do
hard.
It.
See, I just feel there's something more to him, and part of the reason, you know, this is somebody who spoke out. He spoke out about the Uyghurs when he was at Arsenal. He was not afraid to back down from that dispute with Arsenal, whatever way you think, right or wrong. He had that enormous contract, and clearly the wrong contract was given to him. I have a lot of respect for him as a person as well as a player.
Yeah. At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. We're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Roberto Martinez makes his debut as Portugal coach on Thursday in a few hours' time, and Cristiano Ronaldo is in the squad to face Liechtenstein in Lisbon. If he plays, he will break the men's record for most international caps.
Yeah, so he currently holds the record jointly with a guy I was not familiar with until Cristiano's caps appearance record in the men's game became a thing, which a guy named Badr Al-Mutawa. He's 36 years old. He last played for Kuwait in 2022. I don't know if he's... I haven't been able to work out if he's officially retired, but...
Yeah, why
if
did
you
he
have
go
it,
up to 200, that guy? Why did he stop at 197?
I don't know. He's still playing at club football from what I can tell. So, like, why not just keep coming back just to keep driving Cristiano to keep needing more? It's funny. He's actually younger than Cristiano. So,
yeah. 2 years younger, yeah. Cristiano was...
But it's an interesting one. I will... Look, it's 197 games. It would be when he plays his next game. And I think he will. It's Liechtenstein and Luxembourg. I mean, come on now. But what I find fascinating is how different the records are in the women's game, for obvious reasons, many reasons, especially starting with the fact that professional club game wasn't as established. The women's record is 354 caps.
Wow.
Belongs to Christine Lilly. She got 354 caps in 23 years playing
international
football.
How many games a year
football?
That is? What, 15, 16 games a season?
That's crazy, isn't it?
National team, like.
But I'm guessing, you know, look, I emphasize this to talk about, I think she won her first cap in 1987 or 89. You know, she played in the 90s and early 2000s mostly. Just where the women's game is today, then back then, you know, you have failed leagues in the US and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of these women, all they could play is international football. Now we have much more of the structure. There's a lot more to be done and whatever. But, you know, I think people need to think about this stuff as much as they think about equal pay and things like that. Yeah. But think about the opportunities that many women in the world still do not have.
Mm.
Didier Deschamps has picked the next French captain to replace Hugo Lloris, and it's Kylian Mbappe, which means Antoine Griezmann misses out. Jules, your thoughts. And tell me first, these two really the only alternatives?
Yeah. I think Paul Pogba would have been the third one, had he been fit and had he been playing regularly the last year or so. But because he's not, then there was no Varane anymore, who would have been the captain, no Lloris, of course, who was the captain.
Conte injured, obviously.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if Deschamps would have considered N'Golo just for, you know, the personality and everything, and also the
is injury. It hard for Didier Deschamps to imagine a short central defensive midfielder winning a World Cup
as a captain? You're right, at least he would have related to it, to be fair. There's two things here. The first one is you can't really, I think Mbappe is the right choice. And yeah, you can say, is he a bit selfish? Is he this? Is he that? Maybe. I think he will grow with the armband. That will make him more mature. That will make him more collective-minded in a way. He's the best player in the world. He's your best player. Like, it's not often, you don't always have your best player as your captain, but more often than not, they are. So it's completely understandable and it makes sense. Griezmann was really upset. Griezmann arrived in Paris on Monday thinking that he was going to be the captain because of his experience. Obviously, he's got 3 more years of international football than Kylian. He's obviously much older. He's turned 32 on Tuesday. He thought the bond he has with Deschamps was strong enough. The form that he's showing with Atletico Madrid is great. So I think he really believed that suddenly at the Euros, he would be, between now and the Euros, that he would be the captain and lead the team. So I can see why he was upset. However, if you're Griezmann, surely you get to Paris on Monday thinking, okay, I have a chance, but so has Kylian. And surely, it sounds like, and certainly from what the way I was told the story by his side, Griezmann's side, was like, oh, he was just convinced it was going to be him. You can't just expect something like this when Kylian Mbappe is also a contender, right? And I just think that Griezmann should have prepared himself. Great if I have it and I want it, and I'd be disappointed if I don't have it. But also, look who is against me in this race, and it's Kylian Mbappe.
I think a lot of it depends on the messaging that came to him from Deschamps before, right? Because, and the conventions that exist in France and elsewhere. So, for example, in Italy, it's simple, right? In Italy, historically, it's, who has the most caps on the team?
Yeah.
You, Bob? Okay, you're the captain, right?
Yeah, and clubs so do that as well. Real Madrid does that.
Many clubs do it that way. I love what Chicho did with Brazil, where he says, like, nah, you're all leaders. Like, you guys will all rotate, right? Yeah. So then you take the sting out of it. I think the key thing with the captain is it can't be somebody that you drop, right? Somebody who is at risk of getting dropped. Yeah. And I think maybe that's where Griezmann's issue might be a little bit. And maybe if I wanted to give Deschamps an out, and, well, first of all, Deschamps should have messaged very clearly to Griezmann before, I have not decided yet. It could be you, it could be Kylian, as you said, right?
Yeah.
And not made him think it was going to be him, if that's what he did. So
Griezmann assumes it was going to be him.
But I think, objectively, I'm thinking like Deschamps. He says, okay, I had Griezmann playing as a midfielder in the World Cup. He's not playing that role for Atletico Madrid. Griezmann's fantastic, right?
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to be fit, who's not going to be fit. You know, maybe Tchouaméni and Camavinga are playing the football of their lives. Maybe Conte's back. Maybe Pogba's back. Maybe I want to play 4 midfielders, whatever. Maybe there'll be no room in my lineup for Griezmann. And I don't want to create a situation where my captain is somebody, he's dropped the captain.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared to build my team around him or have him be an integral part. It's different when it's a right back who always plays and who never goes in and out, right? But in that role, especially because his role with Atleti is different from the role that he played with France at the World Cup, this is the only out I can give him. I also kind of feel that maybe what I would have done is I would have said, Griez, you're the captain through the Euros. You might not start. Being very, very, you're very important. You may not start. You may not start because I'm not comfortable playing that way for whatever reason. You are not guaranteed a spot. Are you okay with that? And if he's okay with it, then you go to Kylian and say, hey, Kylian, you can wait. That would have been a way out.
I just think that even politically, I think Deschamps needs Kylian on his side, really close ally, more than Griezmann. Kylian is 24. You've got it for another 10 years. and Griezmann is 32. I think the Euro is probably
You think Kylian's going to be upset and retire from the national team and go all Benzema?
No, I just think you can't lose Kylian in the sense by losing. I mean, if you're Deschamps, you would rather upset Griezmann because Griezmann will come around. And by the way, Kylian and Mbappe and Griezmann had a conversation. They kind of cleared the air, blah, 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 which was good. And it would be fine. But I think Griezmann would move on from a decision like this quicker than Mbappe would. And I think that was also a part of the thinking. Jose Mourinho has a left ear on his Roma contract and wants a meeting with the club's owner to discuss an extension. Reportedly, Gabby wants wider ranging powers and become that kind of English style manager at Roma.
Yeah, so English style manager, I have that in quotes because it's what this is the messaging from
everybody
the camp. So, oh, English style manager.
Okay. Yeah.
Can I just first come out and say, like, the English style manager in top flight football, even here in England, does not exist. There is no such thing, right? I'm trying to think. Maybe Sean Dyche was that when he was at Burnley. He's certainly not that at Everton now. Maybe will be. The idea of the Sir Alex Ferguson,
super powerful,
O'Neill, like, oh, I do the Harry Redknapp, I do the transfers. It does not. It does not exist. Yeah. Every club, you know, the English style, even in most clubs in the Championship, is I have a director of football recruitment guy, and you're the first team coach.
Even Manchester United now.
Even Manchester United, so. So to even use this language to me shows you're somehow stuck in the past. I'm not saying Mourinho used it, right? I don't know what more powers he wants, given who Roma's director of football is, right? Thiago Pinto.
Yeah, he's
so. But the way I see it, and he says he wants a meeting with the Friedkins, Roma's owners. Look, Friedkins are going to do what the Friedkins are going to do. For me, I would have said, hey, Jose, you have another year on your contract. You're the second highest paid manager in Serie A, one of the top 10 highest paid managers in Europe. What's the rush? Let's see where we are at the end of the season.
If there's Champions League or not.
You've got another year, and then we can have a conversation about extending your deal, more power than you already have. And then if we have this more power, then, you know, maybe you'll explain to us some of the signings that were made, Sergio Oliveira, whatever, that didn't work out, and explaining also the signings that did work out, why you think they worked out, and we're going to treat you like a director of football.
Yeah.
Until that happens, you know, no, we're not going to talk new contract now. Let's wait and see where you are. And you know what? It's in Mourinho's interest, too, to not talk new contract, because if Mourinho goes and he wins the Europa League, if they finish a strong top four, which, again, a lot's going to depend on Juve's points penalty, he'll be in a stronger position just a year left in his contract. Completely. Somebody else wants him. You only have to pay 1 year of compensation rather than multiple years, which is what would happen if he got a new deal. So, I can understand why Mourinho's doing it. I also would expect the Friedkins to take a step back. Mm. Paul Mitchell is stepping away from his role at Monaco. His CV includes Southampton, Spurs, Leipzig. Now Monaco. So it's all those clubs that, you know, we've praised in the past for the transfer dealings. I would expect clubs to be queuing up for him.
Yeah,
and I presume they are.
I think they are, Gav. I think a club like Liverpool, for example, are very, very interested in Paul Mitchell as a sporting director to replace Michael Edwards and Julian Ward. I think he's a really bright guy. I think he would be a great asset to have for many clubs in terms of structuring your squad, you know, making, like, you use that phrase for the Monaco job, where, as you explained before, with Monaco it's a little bit different maybe than other clubs, but the way he restructured that squad was very, very clever, very good, very positive. And I think if you maybe give him a bit more sort of leeway and maybe more money or maybe more possibilities, I think he can do an even better job than just go and sign young players that we get developed and then sold for more money. So
what I like about him is, you know, and he is highly respected and stuff, and obviously he was at Southampton with Pochettino before that. I think he was at MK Dons. I think he started out, like many do, as sort of like a scout type guy. But he's had so many varied experiences, because obviously working in an environment like Leipzig and the Red Bull organization is very different from what you were doing when you were at Spurs, and it's different from what you were doing at Southampton, and it's different from what you're doing in Monaco. So you're not getting somebody who's only kind of worked in one system and knows that system really well in terms of football operations. I think
And he's ready for a top club, I think. Because yeah, and of I think, all that experience, you're right.
And this is the right time to leave as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it gives time, it gives the club time to go and see if they can bring you in, and then you can get to work immediately this summer.
The only thing, he's got a year left on his contract. And I don't know if a club that come want to come and get him has to pay compensation or not. I don't really know
if
how
he's resigning.
Sporting director, he can resign, although he wants to get his successor ready and all that in place. I don't think he wants to leave Monaco just like this. So we will have to see. One of the three prosecutors in the criminal investigation against Juventus for false accounting has recused himself. Is this good news for UEFA? And you mentioned that story a few weeks ago.
Well, I'm glad. I don't understand why it took him so long to recuse himself. Right. This is a guy named Ciro Santoriello. So what he did, and look, it's not a good look. It was taken out of context. In speaking at some sort of legal conference he was at, he explained a situation 5 or 6 years ago where he had in a different case where he had a chance to prosecute Juventus.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm a big Napoli fan. I'd love nothing more than to prosecute Juventus because I hate them. But the evidence wasn't there, so I didn't prosecute them. So if anything, you know, he argued, look, it strengthens my case, right? I'm in the open, right? I showed in the past that I didn't prosecute them just to prosecute. However, once it is out there and it becomes a big media storm, you should not be involved in this case. Simple as.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's good news or bad news. I think the other two guys who've been working with him are still there. Their job is to collect the evidence and make the case. And then it's going to be a court that decides. And by the way, this is not a sporting investigation. This is a criminal investigation. So these are real courts, real judges, real people. There's no reason for him to be involved at this stage. José Luis Mendilibar is the new Sevilla manager, replacing our buddy Jorge Sampaoli, who himself took over from Julen Lopetegui back in October, I think it was. Jules, they're 2 points above relegation. Does this move the needle?
I think they needed a change, to be fair, I think. And we saw the Acuna incident the other day when he was given a piece of paper during a game with, I suspect, like, tactical informations on it, and he didn't even read it. I think the fracture between Sampaoli and the dressing room, the players who've had enough, was too big. They had to make a change. Mendilibar is one of the most experienced managers in La Liga. I think he's been on a team in La Liga, on the bench of a team from La Liga, in almost 500 games or something like that, just below. So he's got that experience, and I think he's been in this position before. So maybe for that sense, just to keep them up, he's the right guy. They also have, obviously, a quarterfinal of the Europa League to play against Manchester United. It's not going to be easy. So the name might not be your familiar name, for example, for the listeners of the show. It's not one of the biggest names either. But I think he's been in this situation before. He knows how to deal with it, maybe.
I don't want to dumb this down, but, you know, there are vision coaches, there's project coaches. And
but is that what you need now, though?
No. It could have been Sampaoli in October if it had worked. Yeah. His project didn't work. He fell out with everybody. He acted erratically, as we've seen him do in the past before. So we didn't get good Sampaoli. So no, I think they're right to move on. I don't think Mendilibar is going to screw anything up. He's going to play the percentages, keep them up, and then the club will figure out what they want to do in the summer.
Exactly. Roy Hodgson is back, baby, at the age of 75. That's right, 75. He's the man chosen to take over from Patrick Vieira and coming back to Crystal Palace. Are you surprised? Surely you must be. Come on.
So I think I've known Roy for, I don't want to date myself. No, but
40
it is,
years, you can say.
No, it's not 40 years. I'm not that old. But I've known him.
He is.
But he is, yes. He made his debut in 1976.
There's seven current Premier League managers were not born.
You were not born.
When Hodgson started
at Halmstad's in Look, he's a phenomenal story in the sense that, you know, this is a guy who's English, who's very English, Croydon Roy, very Southeast London, and yet, you know, was not a good footballer, ended up going to South Africa, going to various places, you know, got his job in Sweden in 1976 at Halmstad's, you know, started winning, started having success, comes back way back in 1982. He comes back to England. People are like, who are you? We've never heard of you. You were not a good footballer. You must be a rubbish manager and didn't do well. Bristol City, I think it was. Then goes off again, ends up coaching Switzerland, ends up coaching Inter Milan to a UEFA Cup final. Comes back to Blackburn again, like I think a season or something. And they're like, well, who is this guy? Like, oh, he doesn't know the league. Like, and Roy's more English than you are. And I love the fact that many years after that, he got to be England manager. I love the fact because, you know, here's a guy who is legit English. And just to show the mentality of English football back then, what Roy had to deal with, because he wasn't a good player, because he had spent all this time abroad, people viewed him as with suspicion, like he was some kind of weirdo. I think it was almost worse for Roy, to be honest, than it was for a foreign manager coming over here. He had to overcome a ton of prejudice. All of this is forgotten now, right? But this is really important. And then he goes to Fulham and, you know, again, everybody's skeptical. He brought some Norwegian dude, he had Brede Hangeland with him. Like, people said, like, you know, what that. And then with Fulham, he takes them to a Europa, to another Europa League final. Tremendous achievement.
Yeah.
And then, look, he's made mistakes because he's not, I don't think he is God's gift to coaching. Liverpool fans don't like him.
No.
Wasn't good there. Obviously, with England, I think he had three really bad campaigns. Some people said, oh, no, but look at this and that. Like, no. You generally stunk it up, and the Iceland game is just kind of the, you know, the cherry on top. But then he comes back again, and with Palace playing not very nice football, keeps them up. I think that's what they want from him now. Safe pair of hands while they plan on the future. I
don't want to diss him. I like the person he is. This doesn't make any sense. It doesn't.
You would have continued with Patrick McCarthy.
100%.
Or maybe the actor Andrew McCarthy.
You sacked Patrick Vieira to replace him with Roy Hodgson. I don't understand.
I'm hoping there's a long-term plan in the offing. I don't know, but that's, you know, that's the world of Steve Parrish. So who knows?
Yeah.
Oh, let's talk about something happier here. Florin Balogun is reportedly on holiday in Florida, very close to the U.S. men's national team camp.
Yeah,
Jules. He's eligible to play for Nigeria, for England, and for the United States because he was born in the city, New York City, obviously. He's played for the U.S. and most recently for England at youth. He's played a lot at under 21, actually, for England. Any clues as to what's going through his mind? Oh, and he's an Arsenal player.
Yeah, on loan to Reims. He was called up by England under 21. I think he was very disappointed not to be called up by Gareth Southgate, and I think he has a point. It's not an issue with Ivan Toney or Harry Kane, but I don't see why you can't include him. I think England would be
especially
crazy if England miss out on Flo Balogun as an international player, i.e. he chooses the US or Nigeria. I think this would be terrible from an England point of view because he's got the potential to be one of the best strikers in the world in the next few years. I think he's that talented.
But he's not done it in the Premier League. So.
But why don't you take him in this squad and he comes to St. George's Park and he trains with you? You don't have to play him. You can play him. But unless you haven't watched him play, and I wouldn't put him.
He's played more than a dozen times for England under 21. So I'm assuming they already have a handle.
I just don't understand why he was not called up. Really don't.
I agree with you, especially with the way this training camp has worked out, where with Rashford pulling out, right?
Yeah.
So for these two games, and you can say, I don't know, it's Italy and then I forget who they're playing next. Ukraine, right? So those are probably the two toughest teams in the group, right?
Yeah.
So you have... I hate having a go at Southgate because I really like him, but I can't help myself, right? So your attackers, okay, are Harry Kane, who, you know, has gone through the trauma of losing his coach or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You got Ivan Toney, the betting man, right?
Yeah.
Who has yet to be capped. We like him, but whatever. For the wide positions, with Rashford going out, Rashford who could also fill in for you up front, right?
Yeah.
You have Grealish, Foden, Bukayo Saka. Great players. Those are three people. And then you have Madison. Yeah. Right? Madison, who, as far as I know, hasn't played winger for England or done so reliably, right? What are you doing? Would it have killed you to bring another dude along?
No.
To give it a different look? Who else is going to play? Like, God forbid, Saka and Grealish bump heads. And what, you got Foden on one, but you're going to play Ivan Toney on the other wing? You're going to change the system to something you haven't played before? I don't understand this at all.
No, no.
He left Callum Wilson at home as well. Another forward. Like, and Sterling, maybe understandable. Sterling, I think, isn't fully fit. But it seems so odd that you wouldn't call up Balogun if this if this is really what's behind it. And I'll tell you what, if you're Balogun, you look around and you say, I'm a center forward, right?
Yeah.
I am a center forward. I have a chance to play for the U.S. men's national team, who I know will definitely be qualifying for the next World Cup, unlike England.
Why are they not calling him, though? Why are they not calling him up?
I think, I wouldn't be surprised. I would assume from the U.S. perspective, it could be that nobody's in charge there right now because they don't have a national team coach or a permanent national team coach. And they don't have a permanent general manager, because that position, they're going to need to appoint that first before they make a decision. For me, it's a no-brainer. You have a conversation. Maybe they've had it, and it's not out yet. Conversation with them and say, like, hey, come play with us. Come play with us, because at the last World Cup, you know, we had the Muppet Show at center forward, right? I don't want to have a go at these people, you know, but if your competition is who is the U.S. center forward in 2020? But Pifok, the other guy, Ferreira. Who are these guys?
Yeah, the tall guy, Dyke. Those kind of
I mean, surely you're in the mix. Again, whereas if you're Balogun with England, you know Harry Kane's going to be there in 2 years' time.
Yeah, but I would say for the US, exactly what I said to for England, you would be crazy not to jump on Flo Balogun's talent right now to the US and do everything you can to convince him to choose you. And maybe you're right, maybe they have had that conversation already, but also maybe they haven't. And same for Nigeria. Nigeria is different because they seem to have this incredible pool of young centre forward coming through and Osimhen, etc. And, you know, the gift, obviously, that keeps on giving. Plus others, maybe for them it's slightly different. But for the USA and for England as well, don't let him choose somebody else. It's as simple as that. Lazio have banned a supporter for an anti-Semitic shirt at the Rome derby. Gab, what did you make of it?
So I am encouraged that after a lot of words, Lazio do seem to be taking this stuff more seriously. They have... This is a complicated story, right? And people don't like complicated stories. But obviously there is a portion of the Lazio ultras which has very far-right, racist, anti-Semitic views. I should point out, these are the same Lazio ultras who hate the Lazio president, Claudio Lotito, for different reasons, and there's a continuous dispute between them. They're finally acting. He's not acting against one of the ultras. He's acting against, I don't know where they found this guy. He seems like an absolute moron.
Yeah.
This is a German guy. He wore a Lazio shirt to the game, and on the back it said Hitlerson, with the number 88, which, you know, has some far right implications.
Yeah.
I think this person needs help. He should not be going anywhere near a stadium. And they threw the book at him and they banned him. But again, I don't know if this guy is some tourist who says, haha, wouldn't it be funny if I show up at the Rome Derby dressed like this, and he goes back to Germany and lives his life. But at least you made a statement.
Yeah.
They also reported, and this is a crime in Italy, it's a crime to do the so-called Roman salute, which looks a lot... harks back to ancient Rome, but was it then later adopted by the fascists? Looks like the Heil Hitler salute. It's what Paolo Di Canio did on the pitch years ago. So they're investigating, and I think they've charged two fans with doing it. Although, again, they're not Lazio ultras. They're two Romanian dudes. Again, I don't know who they are. They could be. Is there such a thing as far-right tourism to Lazio games?
I don't know. Yeah, you go and you think you get away with it because it's Lazio.
I think, look, it's better than what they were doing before, which was something close to nothing. I will be more impressed when they take a stand
on their own people.
On their own. Yeah. Oh, and I know, again, if Lotito were here, he'd start shouting at me and saying, like, oh, I have to go around with an armed guard because the ultras are trying to kill me. I hate the ultras, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's fine. Just prosecute them.
Yeah.
Use the tools at your disposal when they do stuff like this, right? Don't just tell me how much you hate them because they're trying to kill you, all right? Just, it would be a better look. But look, something's better than nothing.
That's very true.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jules, I didn't think I'd have to bring up Dele Alli on the show again, but apparently I do. he's at Besiktas, and he's in trouble. Or more accurately, he's not at Besiktas.
Well, no, they don't know where he is. That's what they said. The manager came out yesterday saying, like, I gave him a few days off, and he went, and he hasn't come back. We don't know where he is. We can't get in touch with him. His loan from Everton to Besiktas has been a disaster, let's be honest. He has hardly played, and when he's played, he hasn't been good. He scored 3 goals, but he hasn't been really good at all. It's not the move that we thought could revive, or some thought could maybe revive his career, blah, 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 all of that. Not the case. Now he's in trouble with his club. And funnily enough, Kim Kardashian put a video on her social media of Dele Alli at her house, turning up and taking photos with the kids and stuff like that. So this is where he was.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I would have thought you'd want to keep Dele Alli away from...
Clearly not. So the curse of Kim Kardashian, clearly seeing the Dele Alli's career path, is very much still on, Gav. More seriously, now this matter, La Liga has reported racist insults against Vinicius Jr. during the Clásico at the Camp Nou.
Racist insults, of course, not coming from an opposing player, but coming from the fans and under protocols in Spain. Then the police have to go investigate it. This is the 8th time this season that they've done it. You know what? I say, keep it up, Liga. Continue doing this. Let's be very clear, right? Because people are like, oh, racism. Why don't the league investigate it? If this were the NFL, it's not the NFL, right? La Liga, here you have a league, and you have a federation, and you have law enforcement, right? Yeah. The NFL, they can make up their own rules, right? You have a commissioner who's basically God, who makes $49 million a year, and says, I don't like you, Jules. You're banned. And he doesn't have to explain it to anybody. He's free to do that, right? Yeah. There, Javier Tebas has a lot of power over certain things. The federation has certain powers over other things. There's a division of power. So all La Liga can do is continue reporting this, continue shining a spotlight on this, and hope that these people are identified and dealt with, and make sure that it continues to be followed up on. What I would love to see is every time they go and report this, they say, not just tell us it's the 8th time, these are the 7 cases beforehand. And look, we send emails on these days about what's happening, how did these cases get resolved, did they get resolved one way or the other. Keep reminding us, because I think this is the only way you're going to affect change unless you start giving La Liga more power, which isn't going to happen. The French women's national team have a new coach. I'm kind of surprised they went for Wendy Renard's dad, Herve. No, he's not really his dad,
is he? He's not his dad. No relation. It's not done yet completely. Hervé Renard, as you know, he's still the Saudi Arabia men's national team head coach. He needs to get out of that contract.
Let's give people, for those of us who don't follow African football, tell us who he is and why he is such a cult figure and why he's such a highly rated manager.
He won 2 AFCON with 2 different countries. He's clearly very good at managing national teams in general. Remember what Saudi Arabia did at the World Cup by beating Argentina in the opening game.
It's not just that. He also, like, he's got the long hair. He looks like an extra from Miami Vice. He wears a tight white shirt, sometimes with a sport coat. Seriously, like...
No, he's cool. And I think he was very impressive, apparently, in his interview with the French FA. He really wants the job. And I think he would get it. Just needs to be... It will take a bit of time.
I'm curious. Given the success he's had in African football, and let's say football outside of Europe, he is highly regarded.
Yeah.
But the dude's French. I think he used to play for Sochaux, if I'm not mistaken. Whatever. What is it... The Ligue 1 teams, are they not been impressed with him?
No, he had a short stint in Ligue 1. He went for a few jobs. I think he just prefers national. I think he prefers international football, really.
So he has more time to work on his wardrobe.
Yeah,
and his tan.
Exactly. The clock is ticking.
But he's never worked with women before. He's never worked in women's football.
I don't think so. The clock is ticking on Adrien Rabiot's contract with Juventus. He's a free agent in June, and now he's been linked to Liverpool. Gab, would this make sense?
I don't think it would make sense because he's 28 years old, because a free agent signing of a 28-year-old with Rabiot's baggage, I think, is not what Liverpool need. I have to say about Rabiot, I've made fun of him as much as anybody because I think he's been a dud for most of his career. Hasn't lived up to his potential. There's been issues. His mom at Paris Saint-Germain, as you know well, they spent 6 months without playing. Before that, he was in Manchester City. That's been the story. However, over the past 12 months, he's been an absolute beast.
Yeah.
I thought he had this very, very good World Cup. He's been arguably Juve's best player this season. You're getting a guy where it seems like everything's come together. His technical ability, which he always had, his athletic ability. He's been more humble. So if you think he's turned the corner and he's motivated, maybe he feels the clock is ticking. Question is, has he left all this baggage behind?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he will stay at Juventus. I think they'll extend his deal.
I think he wants to stay at Juventus. What's not clear to me is, if you're Juve, how much can you offer him? Because he's on a big wage. He's on a big salary already. He probably deserves a raise based on the season, but you know, they're not in a great place financially. Yeah. International break means Women's Champions League. We had 4-1-0 wins. Jules, you follow this. I don't, so please contextualize for me. Bayern beat Arsenal at home, which I think is a little bit of a surprise, yes?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. They rode their luck a little bit. I thought they scored, and Arsenal were unlucky not to score themselves. It was a quite heroic defensive performance from Bayern in the second half. But the game next week at the Emirates would be the second leg would be even better for it.
Now, Chelsea went away from home, and they beat Olympique Lyonnais.
Yeah, big win. Very good first half for Emma Hayes' players. They took the lead. They could have maybe scored two. They hit the post, Lauren James. And then in the second half, Lyon were better, as you would expect. They improved, but it was just still not good enough to get a draw.
Barcelona went, and they beat Roma 1-0 away in front of the biggest ever crowd to watch a women's game in Italy, close to 40,000 at the Stadio Olimpico, which I think
was incredible to see. Great.
I'm guessing the fact that Barcelona only won 1-0 means that this is a fine performance from Roma?
Yeah, it was defensively again, because it was the game that we expected, really.
What, did Mourinho take over the women? So I couldn't resist.
Right now, I can't compete with Barcelona. But still, it's a good showing. I expect Barca to win easily the second leg, back home. But it was good. It was good. And it was good that all those games were tight, because the PSG Wolfsburg game at the Parc des Princes was really tight as well. Wolfsburg won that 1-0.
Against 10 women, 10 players.
Yeah, red card. There was a penalty. There was a couple of VAR calls as well, which again will make the second leg interesting, because I think PSG, like Lyon, like Chelsea, PSG can go to Wolfsburg and get something. So it'd be quite fascinating next week if you fancy watching it. The Premier League have asked referees to allow players observing Ramadan, which has just begun, to be allowed to take on food and water when they break their fast, even if it's during games. I suspect you're happy with this. You okay with this?
100%. And just to be clear, it's not like, oh, look, the sun is set, let's stop everything and go have a burger. The way it's being done is kind of organically during natural breaks in play.
Yeah.
You know, we often see players going over to the sidelines, getting a sip of water or whatever. If you're going to do that, take an energy bar. Yeah, I think this is logical. It's not going to disrupt the game.
It's happened before.
It's being inclusive. It's happened before, but I think without the official license for it, I don't even think people are going to notice. Whether a player or not fast during Ramadan is obviously a very personal choice. Some players do, some players don't. Some players are more affected than others. All of that to be taken into account, but have the option. I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer from the Premier League. Well done. Emmanuel Adebayor has made it two Arsenal legends retiring in 24 hours. Jules, again, put him in context for us. And by the way, I love the fact, for those who lost track of him, at the end of his career, he's made his money. What does he do? He goes back home to Togo and he plays for a club called Samassi or whatever. Doesn't need to do that.
Fascinating character, really on and off the pitch. I think really talented for his physique. This totally a bit lanky, I give you that, but still highly technical, with a sense of goal when he wanted to. It was a lot when he wanted to with Manu, really. Again, the sort of potential, the fulfilling potential that we talked about, Ozil, I think he's still there. I think he could have had a much better career than he had if he'd really wanted to, because I think he had incredible potential. Still good, obviously, at Arsenal, especially one really good season, or even half of the season. At City, at Spurs, he went to Real Madrid. Still, some people are wondering how, but he still did and played for them with an unlikely number still, but regardless. Off the field, unpredictable. I think that would be the right way of I think putting him.
I remember I had my own Adebayor story many years ago. A friend of mine who's an agent, he took a player to Monaco an Italian player named Joseph O'Shadigan, who's since kind of disappeared. But, I mean, this is a long, long time ago. And so he invited me along, go, you know, watch training, let's hang out. So we're watching the first team train, and nearby on a pitch, or I think the first team, maybe they weren't even training, maybe they were just doing drills. Whatever, there was like a mini pitch, and where the younger players were training. And there's this guy who's like, I mean, he looks like a skyscraper towering over these other kids. And like, you know, the ball sticks to his feet. He was part Ibra, but then he was so strong and had a physicality. And that was Adebayor. And like, they're saying, oh yeah, this kid, they're so excited for him here. You know, and I don't know if that was that his first club or, well, obviously not. But or,
yeah, he was at Metz before, but then, yeah, he was.
And I remember seeing that. Like, wow, like, I wonder what's going to happen to this guy. And then he had quite a career.
Adebayor, who has pajamas, had his own shirt. Like, he was wearing one of his shirts with his name in the back and his number.
Would wear it to sleep.
Yeah. Which I've always found. We took the Eurostar a few times together for international break. Well, you know, we used to go at the same time often. And I knew his agent at the time really well. And yeah, he told me this story just so randomly, saying that, yeah, he has his pajamas, it's one of his club shirts.
Does he then wear like the shorts?
I don't know.
Well?
I don't know. He only mentioned the shirt. Maybe he's naked underneath. I don't know. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, talking about tall strikers, has said that he hopes to play at Euro 2024. I bet you're not surprised. And it would be a record, by the way, if he was to feature there at his age.
I'd be surprised if he said, I don't want Euro 2024 until the dude decides to retire, which there's no sign of that yet. Yeah. Then, of course, he wants to play Euro 2024. Why not? Cristiano Ronaldo reckons that the Saudi League in 5, 6, or 7 years could be the 4th, 5th, or 6th best league in the world. Yeah. Jules?
No. Definitely not. I think he would need more time than that if ever he gets there. To be fair, fourth is probably what you would say, Germany. Fifth is Ligue 1. Sixth is Eredivisie, potentially Portugal, maybe. There's no way the Saudi League in 5 years, 6 or even 7 years, can be at the level of those leagues.
Can we just take a step back here? It's not like Cristiano Ronaldo said, I did a scientific study and looked at market trends and whatever. He's being there. He's being a gracious guest. The Saudis are paying him a lot of money. And yeah, he says something nice. It's good,
say
Ronaldo.
Say it differently then.
What's
don't
he supposed to say?
Those...
No, I think you guys are rubbish and sad. And...
No, but you say, yeah, he's progressing, he's improving. Don't give me numbers and like comparisons and like stuff like that. It's not on. The new episode of Ted Lasso is out on Apple TV. And many Chelsea fans are angry about this. It's the whole new season, if you want, the third season. Gab, what's going on? Why are they unhappy?
All right, so there's a storyline in there where there's a character named Roy Kent who in the storyline used to play for Chelsea, and they go back and they play against Chelsea, and there's a banner up that says they don't make them like Roy anymore. That banner, turns out, is a banner that Chelsea fans put up in honor of Ray Wilkins when he passed away. Ray Wilkins, of course.
Yeah, it's a banner that is there at Stamford Bridge all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, Ray Wilkins is a very important figure. Obviously, I don't know if he started his career there, but he certainly played there, then went on Manchester United, Milan, and then was there for many years as an assistant coach to Ancelotti and others. So the Chelsea Supporters Trust have come out and said, look, we've seen this edit. It's disrespectful. We've expressed our disappointment to the club. We want Chelsea to address this. Todd Boehly then replies, saying he had nothing to do with these arrangements, that, you know, the deal with Apple was struck in, I love the way how these private equity guys talk, Q1 22.
First quarter.
Yeah. We're sorry it affected so many, and mostly we care about Ray and his family. Fair enough. With somebody else who did it, whether Abramovich, Bruce Buck, Marina, whatever, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this, especially towards somebody who passed.
Exactly.
You know, it's frankly silly. You know? So good for Boehly to clear that up. Although I don't understand. Apparently afterwards he said, also point out that none of the quote unquote Chelsea players were actual Chelsea players. Yeah, who cares? Who would actually believe that? Like, it's a TV show, right?
Yeah, what? Joao Felix and Kai Havertz didn't actually play in Ted Lasso against a team of actors.
All right, Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Monday.
Yes.
Internationals Euro 2024. Get a load of that. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.